This podcast is a Radio Mike original production. Head to radiomike.com.au to find out more.
Hey guys, Mike here. Thank you for checking out this bonus episode of the podcast, which is the second compilation of my weekly segment over on 3AW, a Melbourne radio station. If you're not sure what this is, essentially every Wednesday from 2:30 PM till 3 o'clock, I chat on 3AW with DD Dunleavy about movies and TV and streaming. So I realize a lot of you are either international or just can't listen to that live, but I kind of like to package up everything that I do and put it on this feed just so people who want more stuff to listen to and who generally like my stuff can listen to it. Got a lot of great feedback from the first compilation. If you haven't listened to that, definitely check it out. It's just going to be a little bit above this on your feed, so scroll up. But yeah, this is the second compilation. I believe I have two more of these, so just before the end of the year, I'll put up a third compilation, which will be a little bit shorter because it's only two segments as opposed to three. But this time we are talking about, well, first up, we are talking about Tiger King Season 2. I'd love for you guys to give me feedback if you listen to this, general feedback about how you think I went, constructive and whatever, but also just, I'd love to keep talking about this. I love talking about this stuff on the podcast in general. So if you have any thoughts on any of the shows, definitely send them my way, however you like to get in touch with the show, whether it's radiomikepod@gmail.com, radio.mike on Instagram. I am back on Twitter. My Twitter is itsradiomike. So that's cool. Go and follow me. I don't have any followers anymore because my account got deleted last year. So yeah, Tiger King Season 2, talking all about, you know, Carol Baskin and whether or not we think that she killed her husband and fed him to the tigers. Afterward, we are talking about Woodstock 99, a fantastic documentary about a Woodstock festival they tried to hold in 1999 that was absolutely crazy. One of the best documentaries I've seen in a long time. Absolutely huge. Lots of artists and bands who were at the festival in the documentary as well. This is worse. It's worse than Fyre Festival. And then finally, we talk about NITRAM. People who are international may not know about this movie, but it is a new Australian film, and not many Australian films really get very big international audiences, but I'm interested to hear people's thoughts on NITRAM if they've seen it. Essentially, NITRAM is a very interesting story because it is about Martin Bryant, who was Australia's worst ever mass murderer. In terms of gun violence, there was a well-known massacre in Port Arthur in Tasmania in the mid-90s, in which many people sadly lost their lives. And the perpetrator of that is the focus of a new film called NITRAM. It is a really polarizing and controversial film. And for those who don't know, the events of that of the Port Arthur massacre led to huge gun reform here in Australia. There was a massive government push to change gun laws. And, you know, based on a lot of the shootings that happen in the US now so frequently, I'm very, very proud to live in a country like Australia where we have such strong laws against gun ownership. But yeah, this is a very controversial movie that does tackle some darker subject matter. So yeah, I'd love to know what you think. Thank you so much for checking it out. If you want to support me generally, patreon.com/radiomike is the best way to contribute as little as a dollar a month to the show. You get a couple bonus podcasts in there. Special thanks, of course, to DD Dunleavy and her team over at 3AW for giving me this opportunity. DD has constantly given me opportunities during her career, or during my career, really. She was the one who basically helped me begin my career, because when I finished uni, I did work experience on DD's show before moving over to Triple M, then moving over to Fox FM, and then, you know, from there I met Hamish and Andy and Jack Post and started working for them. All right, I will go on to it. I'll stop talking and let you listen to the actual thing you wanted to listen to, which is my compilation of me talking on 3AW with DD Dunleavy. Thank you so much. Enjoy.
Now, on Afternoons.
Ladies and gents, this is the moment you've waited for.
It's time for the showdown.
This is the greatest show. 23 minutes to three. Michael Liberale, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dee Dee. Looking forward today to talking about what I can only describe as Netflix's greatest example of trying to milk a TV show for every dollar it's worth with season two of Tiger King. How are you feeling about it?
I have written in big, bold letters, and I've just highlighted it in orange highlighter, Tiger King 2 is a waste of time.
Yeah, it is a bit like that. And as you said before the break we've just had, Tiger King season one was such a phenomenon over Melbourne's first lockdown. Like, it was huge. But I think we all kind of got caught up in the story. There's so many big personalities. There's a huge murder scandal going on as well. And I don't know. I don't know if it's as good as there is. I don't know if it's as good as people say it is. Yeah. And I also think that season two doesn't have much more to tell, but they've just wanted to continue it.
It has nothing. And I realised when I went to watch Tiger King 2, I'd like to hear from anyone who's seen. Firstly, did you watch Tiger King, the first series, 133693? What did you think of that? What did you think of Joe Exotic? What did you think of Carol Baskin? Whose side were you on? Because you have to pick a side. I want to ask you in a moment, Michael. And if you did watch Tiger King 1, will you watch Tiger King 2 or have you seen it? 133693. Michael, I realised when I went to watch this second series that I actually didn't finish the first one. Did you?
I did finish the first one. So where did you get up to in season one?
I don't know. It was somewhere. I must have switched off in the last episode. But I'd already read by that point that Joe Exotic had gone to jail. And wow, what a haircut he's got now. Do you think is he cutting that himself, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. Like, Joe Exotic is, like, I can only liken Joe Exotic to like one of Chris Lilly's television characters. He's that out there, wacky and self-indulgent. That's the only way I can describe him. But I think what season two is trying to do is like capitalize on the popularity of season one, deal with like everything that's happened since season one, such as Joe Exotic being in prison, and trying to give us a little bit more information, even though there really isn't any, on the disappearance of Don Lewis, Carol Baskin's ex-husband, who people theorize was fed to tigers by Carol herself. And I'm keen to know, has season two changed your opinion on that? Like, what do you think happened to Don Lewis?
Well, hang on a minute. I know it's silly, and she won't be part of this series, and they can't film Joe Exotic himself because he's in jail. All they've got is this weird, blurry image of him on the phone with his strange
in prison
heavy fringe. I don't know what's happening there. bowl cut. So in the first series, it was very much, for those who haven't seen it, Joe Exotic is this bloke who, and I think he's given himself that name, or he definitely has, he kept tigers in a park that people could come and visit. There were lots of questions as to how ethically he was doing that, and there were some terrible incidents. I think one of his employees lost an arm at one point to a tiger attack, a few other things. And he was basically at war with this woman called Carol Baskin, who ran an animal rescue. She wanted to shut him down. He wanted to kill her, and eventually he's ended up in jail for wanting and threatening to kill her. I think, have I got that right, Michael?
I think that's, like, as bizarre as it sounds, I think that is pretty much exactly what happened, which is so unbelievable.
But people took sides, but I was very much on Carol Baskin's side, but I soon realised that that was the unpopular opinion, that most people were on his side. So which side were you on?
I am 100% team Joe Exotic.
Wow.
I am so sus on Carol Baskin. There's something super weird about her. The only thing that's keeping me watching season two is just the information and the investigation ongoing about, her missing husband, Don Lewis.
What have you based your suspicion on? Just because she has flowers in her hair?
No, I just think she's so unwilling to cooperate with any authorities in the ongoing investigation that's been going for 20 years. And she just, I don't know. To me, she seems very sus. There's a will involved that people believe was forged by her. And people think she killed him to inherit a lot of his money. But also Don was a very
weird dude as well, involved with lots of unsavvy behaviours. So there's a lot going on here.
133-693, have you watched any of Tiger King 2? If you watched the first series, are there unanswered questions? Do you want them answered in the second series? David joins us. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good.
I've watched Tiger King 1. It was absolutely fantastic. Carol Baskin definitely killed her husband and fed it to the lions. But
To the tigers.
It is definitely disappointing. And the only thing is that Trump should have given Joe Exotic a pardon.
Well,
would
David,
have been the best thing Tiger could
have. David, have you watched anything? Yeah. Have you watched any of the second series?
Yes, I've watched. Series 2 is disappointing.
Yeah.
There's not much happening. The only good part is trying to get Trump, when he was president, to pardon Joe Exotic. Joe Exotic should not be in jail. Carol Baskin should be.
No, I definitely think he should be in jail. I don't think he can threaten to kill someone, and he definitely did do that. And he's.
I agree with that, dear. Yeah. He definitely did a hitman for hire on Carol, but I still think that Carol has something to answer for with Don's disappearance. I think there's a lot of unexplained things there.
The campaign to have Donald Trump pardon Joe Exotic is hilarious. Just watch those fools and the way they go about it and how it all just falls in a horrible heap. It's so humiliating for them. All right, we'll take your calls. Tiger King 2, have you watched or are you interested to watch it if you watched the first series? Were there unanswered questions? Are you hoping they'll tackle those in Tiger King 2? We'd love to hear from you. 133-693. There's so many like weird characters in this show just making all these unverifiable claims. But James Garrettson, he's the one that gave all the evidence of the murder-for-hire plan that brought down Joe Exotic. He reckons that Carol Baskin made the most money off of Tiger King than anyone. She went on Dancing with the Stars and she somehow monetized it. But he says the only reason she's famous is because people think she might have killed her husband. And as he says, that's pretty messed up, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I kind of agree with that. And I'm not sure if you're up to this episode in season two in which the family of Don Lewis, the husband that she may have killed, actually almost hijacked the Dancing with the Stars broadcast with Carol Baskin on it. And after her dance on the show, it cut to an ad break. They had actually paid for advertising space right after that where they encouraged Carol Baskin to give up information about what happened to their dad, Don Lewis, which I thought was such an incredibly brave move to pretty much hijack that entire broadcast.
That's bizarre. No, I never got that far, and I don't think I will. I've watched probably 1.5 episodes, and I'm kind of done. I'm just like, they're all making me sick at this point, and I'm not really that interested in any of them. For a moment there, when it was going to be an investigation into what happened to Carol's missing husband, I thought, well, that's intriguing, but then just all those odd people were putting me off watching anymore. Vanessa joins us. She's got a question. Hi, Vanessa. Oh, she's not there anymore. Michael, what else have you been watching that's any good?
I've just started, in the wake of Squid Game and the success of Squid Game, I feel like there's this huge demand now around the world for South Korean content. There's a great new series on Netflix that's just launched. It's called Hellbound, and it's similar in style to Squid Game. It's about people begin getting text messages saying that they are doomed to go to hell. And in 5 days, they will be taken to hell. And these enormous angels, in inverted commas, are coming down to Earth to burn people alive. And I know that sounds absolutely insane, DD, but it is a really cool show if you are into fantasy, drama, and also crime investigation, because the authorities are treating it like a normal crime, essentially.
Oh, I was hating it up until you said crime investigation, because I always tend to see. I love that. I can't resist where they're investigating a murder or something. I love it. I don't know what it is. I just like to see the thing be solved. Okay, so Hellbound, and where is that? Is that on Netflix?
It's a Netflix original series as well. Hey, can I ask you one question, Dee Dee?
Yeah,
just on Tiger King season two. I think I've talked about it before on this segment, but what do you think about shows that kind of wrap up nicely and are very popular and then have to have a second season almost because they were so successful, there's no point in Netflix not doing a second season? Would you prefer them just wrapping up and being done with and letting the legacy live on?
Absolutely, I would. Yeah, I think Squid Game is the perfect example of that. Like, I was disappointed when they announced there was going to be a second season because that ended so cleverly. Often shows like that, you know, it's quite shocking, you know, during it as you're watching it, and you kind of don't expect a big payoff at the end, but there was. I know there were unanswered questions, but I was disappointed that they made a second series of that. Yeah, I would rather they'd left it. Is that how you feel about Tiger King 2?
Oh, absolutely. I think pretty much every Netflix original series has an incredible first season. Stranger Things is another good example of this. Great first season. And then because it's so popular, you know, they commercially speaking, it makes no sense to not continue it. But I feel like it never reaches the same heights as the original season. And that's true for Tiger King. I'm sure it'll be true for Squid Game, Stranger Things, and many, many others. So yeah. I'm very cynical about it.
Yeah, and I think sometimes they don't plan the ending of whatever it's going to be when they start out. Ozark is a good example. It was really fantastic in the first few episodes of it. But after a while, it kind of just fizzes out and you get the feeling that they didn't really design where they were going with the show when they started off with it, and it just sort of becomes dull to watch. Michael, thank you for joining me once again. We'll chat again next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Dee Dee.
Today we look at the film Woodstock 99, Peace, Love and Rage, which is on Binge and Foxtel. Good afternoon, Michael Liberale. How are you?
Good afternoon, Dee Dee. I'm doing pretty well, but I must say, while watching this documentary, I definitely had a mild anxiety attack seeing the things that I saw on screen. Because if you haven't seen this documentary, I highly recommend you go and watch it. Move Over Fire Festival. This has got to be one of the worst festivals that ever happened. And I genuinely think you'll be amazed at the disorder and, as the film says, Lord of the Flies-esque behaviour that people exhibited here. What did you think of this?
I was fascinated, absolutely fascinated. I didn't know that there was a Woodstock 99. Of course, we all sort of look back to the original Woodstock, which was in 1969, which was all about peace and love and sticking it to the man and you know, against war and against capitalism and all those things. And this one, for those who don't know, Woodstock 99 was staged not at the original site. I think it was a bit further upstate in New York. And they did it on, instead of a paddock, it was a former Air Force base, I think. So it was all a tarmacked area. And they staged it in the middle of summer. And they had stages all set up around with various acts playing at the time. But the heat, Michael, I think that was probably the reason it went so horribly wrong, was a combination of things, which we'll talk about now. But the heat would have been one of the things. It just looked so oppressive.
And I think we've all been to, well, I know a lot of people in my age group, we've all been to music festivals where we're like, there wasn't enough toilets. It was too hot. It was really gross. But this takes that to the extreme. Like, the heat is so intense. There is not enough water. People are bursting open pipes to actually get access to water. And at one point, people are mistakenly bathing in human feces, thinking that they're having a mud fight. It is truly disgusting, and it all kind of snowballs into some really disgraceful behavior. And you've got some incredible acts performing at Woodstock 99, like huge acts of the 90s, like Red Hot Chili Peppers, Limp Bizkit, Rage Against the Machine, and it's a shame that a lot of these guys, funnily enough, in light of the Travis Scott incident that's just happened, like, it's interesting to see how these guys kind of propagate this violent culture at the festival and don't really try to curb it at all.
That is a debate, and it was something we discussed a week or so ago with the Travis Scott concert just recently. Like, what is the responsibility of the person who has the microphone? And I know that Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit, so just also to fill in the rest of the story, so this concert descended into chaos. The crowd were angry, they were hot, they were dehydrated. One guy actually died, and it was a combination, I think, of physical, you know, they said his obesity contributed to his death, but he was dehydrated. There was fighting in the crowd. I think there were rapes and sexual assaults reported. Mm-hmm. They set fire to all sorts of things. Like, it really just became chaos and such a mess, which is why it's you can't look away because you keep thinking, can this get worse? Yes, it can. But Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit, I was reading, Michael, he was asked, you know, why didn't he say something to stop the crowd? But he sort of said, well, we were swept up in our music and we really weren't aware of what was going on. And that sounds to me something like what Travis Scott said recently with his show.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's a really interesting debate that I believe will be had more and more going into the future. Because if you are on stage, I do feel like you have some responsibility of the behavior of the people that have come to see you. But I guess you're right. Like, if there's thousands of people in a crowd, you can't necessarily be responsible. And also, yeah, with the loud music and everything going on, maybe you can't tell. To be honest, I kind of disagree that Travis Scott was not aware of what was happening. But interestingly, in this documentary, I think what's great about it is they actually have the organizer of Woodstock 99 speaking, and he is very careful with how he speaks. And I feel like he's very deflective of a lot of the blame, as he would be. Did you notice that?
Yes, I did, because I think that, I mean, there is a lawsuit, I believe, and I don't think it's been resolved as yet, by the mother of the young man who died there. It's a very complex case, that particular one, because he kept a diary throughout the day and was clearly having fun and enjoying himself and made no mention of any distress or anything. But I think the organisers have a lot of things to answer for. And the funny thing here is, like, with the original Woodstock, it was all, everything was against capitalism. Whereas with Woodstock 99, there were giant cans of beer and there was every sponsor in the world. And they were selling, and this was one of the key things, they were allowing bottles of water to be sold for, and I worked it out in our equivalent. So it was American bottles, they were being charged $4. So this is in 1999. If you transfer that to Australian money, in today's money, it would be just over $8 a bottle, which to be charged at any venue, yeah, for a bottle of water is a lot. And the kids that were there just didn't have that kind of money. But Michael, there's other people that say, you know, this is a film, this is a documentary, they've shown us whatever scenes they want us to see. But there's other people that say, well, look, hang on a minute. No, all the kids that went there had a fantastic time. So all of these complaints are baseless.
Well, I mean, I think there are a lot of very violent, men in particular who are engaging in very violent acts, tearing down parts of the stage and the barricades and stuff and burning things, creating fires. Yeah, maybe that sounds like a great time, but it sounds like there are probably a lot of other people who probably felt very unsafe at this festival. One thing I found interesting, going back to the responsibility of someone being on stage, Dexter Holland, who is the lead singer of The Offspring, and he was in the documentary, and there is actually footage of him at the festival, and he's actually telling the crowd to calm down and stop behaving so poorly in the crowd. Whereas you look at some of the other acts and they're not really doing that, and they're kind of inflaming the situation. So I don't know. I do think there is responsibility there from the artist to be in charge of the crowd.
Yeah, I'd love to hear from anyone who's seen this documentary, see what you made of it, or if you remember Woodstock 99 in upstate New York, 133-693. And the other thing, Michael, just that time, and you're a little bit younger than your auntie, Dee. I'm not your actual auntie, just referring to myself as that. But at that time in 1999, it was kind of a wild time anyway. I mean, even to the very highest office in the land, where you had Bill Clinton being impeached over the Monica Lewinsky affair. So you've got sexual impropriety at the very top of the country. And the music was a lot, you know, the bands we've mentioned, the Chili Peppers and Limp Bizkit, there's a lot of really angry music. And they stuck in this festival because there were various stages that were showing different acts. But Alanis Morissette bobbed up and did Ironic, which was very low-key. Sheryl Crow, Jewel, who's a sort of a folk country singer, she bobbed up.
Yeah, but they certainly just felt a little bit out of place amongst all of the other really aggressive, you know, rap rock. I think rap rock was all the rage in the 1990s. So and then you've just got Jewel.
I know, coming out with a little country hat on. It was just, there was anger. There was anger. There was anger in the crowd. And some enjoyed burning off all their anger in that forum and dancing. And they did seem to be having a lot of fun. But I'd love to hear from anyone who's seen it. 25 to 3, Michael Liberale, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dee Dee. Very interested to chat to you today about Nitram, a movie that's currently in cinemas but also on Stan. And as you mentioned before the break, talks about one of Australia's darkest days, the Port Arthur massacre, and predominantly focuses on the person responsible for that attack. Very controversial film so far, and has gotten a lot of positive reviews, some fantastic performances from Australian actors like Judy Davis, Essie Davis, Anthony LaPaglia. But I'm keen to know what you thought about this. Did you find it hard to watch?
I did find it hard to watch, yeah. And interesting, you're pronouncing it a different way to mine, but I guess there is no way to actually pronounce the name of the movie because it's a made-up name. It's the name of the perpetrator of that awful incident at Port Arthur, spelled backwards. I found it difficult to watch, I did, but at the same time, it is really well made, I thought, Michael. I'd love to hear from people who've seen Nitram, however you want to pronounce it, 133693, knowing what was coming. And I've got to be honest, I didn't finish the movie. It got to a certain point where I felt I knew enough already. I knew the history, I knew the story and how he got to where he got to. It explained it and sort of fleshed the story out a bit more. But then I became almost sick feeling. I was thinking, why do I want to understand more about him? I don't. I hate him. I don't want to know more about him. And so that's when I turned it off. Michael, you're a bit younger than me. Were you alive when the Port Arthur massacre happened?
I would have been about 1.5 years old. So, you know, all my experiences with Port Arthur are, you know, through my own hearing it from other people, I suppose, hearing the stories on the news and et cetera. So it is a really interesting story to me as someone who wasn't an adult when it happened.
And that's what I wondered, whether younger people, and I'm never going to say that any particular artwork, whether it be a movie or a song or a, you know, a piece of visual art, should not be made, because I think artists are very important in society because they often challenge and question, and I think we need to do all of that stuff. It helps us grow and understand things better. But I wondered what the point of this movie was. And the only thing I could think was that perhaps for someone of your age, that it would give an understanding of what happened and perhaps what we should look for in society these days so that it doesn't happen again, I think.
Well, I'm with you, Dee Dee. Like, I agree with you. I don't really know what the point of this movie is, because for what I could see, and I did watch it till the end, and I think it is really well made, but of this nearly 2-hour movie, probably 90% of it is trying to make you feel sympathy or at least understand the conditions that the perpetrator was under in his life and why, what led him to do this horrible thing that he did. But I agree with you. I don't feel sorry for him at all, and I don't want to be made to feel sorry for him in this film.
Sorry,
go on, Dee Dee.
I also felt myself getting very angry with not so much the father, because he seemed to have an understanding with his father, but his mother was very controlling of him. But I found myself getting angry with her, and I thought, that's not fair. I don't know her. I don't know why she is the way she is, why she is the mother that she is. And I felt I didn't like having this feeling of anger towards this woman, because she's not the one who committed the atrocity. Her son is. And yet I was kind of felt myself blaming her for it. I just felt so uncomfortable watching it. I've had a response on Twitter saying that saw Nitram, thought it was very well done. It only centred on his life before the event, and I found it interesting but quite disturbing. We might just have a listen, Michael, to a little excerpt from the movie. This is from the movie Nitram.
But then this one day, I went to find him, and he wasn't there. I looked everywhere. I gave up and went back to the car. But then I heard someone laughing. I looked around, and there he was, lying on the floor of the back seat, looking up at me, laughing at my pain.
Okay, that's from the movie Night Tram. Have you ever, as I said, I felt a bit sick watching it. Have you ever felt sickened when watching a movie? Have you ever refused to watch a movie or walked out during 133693? Have you seen this particular movie screening on Stan? And what do you think? Michael, Mel joins us. Hi, Mel.
Hi, Mel. Hi, how are you going, Debbie?
Good, thanks.
I saw it and I thought it was a really interesting insight into a disturbed mind, not dissimilar to The Joker or We Need to Talk About Kevin. I don't think that it makes you sympathise with him. Rather, it just shows you what can lead up to the events that took place.
I just don't know, Mel, what we learned from it. Michael, did you learn anything watching it?
Well, a couple interesting points about Mel's points, because you mentioned the Joker film there, which is the origin story of the Joker villain from Batman. And I was going to bring this up. Very similar story. The difference to me is that the Joker is a fictional character and always has been, whereas this person is a real person who did do these horrible things. So I think there is a line to draw there about what's worth creating. Also, in terms of learning, I think that there was one scene in particular towards the end. You may or may not have gotten to it, Didi, but it is the scene in which Nitram actually goes to a gun shop to purchase a firearm. And the ease at which he is able to be served and buy several firearms, I think, might have been the main message of this movie in this very short scene. Like, the customer service and the welcoming of the staff member who happily sold him these firearms, you know, a simple exchange of cash. Any young person can go into a store and buy a gun back then in Australia. So I think stressing the importance of gun reform, particularly the success that Australia has had in that sense, may have been the message and may have been what I took most from this movie.
Yeah, okay then, because I mean, my feeling was that if it wasn't instructive in some way, then it's just there for entertainment. And is that entertainment? I don't necessarily think it is. Lots of people wanting to have a say on this, so we'll come to your calls in just a moment. We'll take a quick break. Michael Liberale and I, Showdown, and the movie is Night Tram on Stan. 17 minutes to 3. All right, Michael Liberale is with me. It is Showdown. We have watched Night Tram. Will you be watching it? Have you been sickened by a movie and had to walk out of it? And Michael, Brad joins us. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Brad. Yeah, Debbie, I definitely won't be going to see this movie. Anyone making money out of a massacre of 35 innocent people being killed, they should have their head read. I reckon it's disgusting, and I reckon everyone should just ban it and not go and see it.
That's a fair point, Brad. Thank you. That someone is making money out of it. I know it's on a streaming service now, but it was screened in Tasmania in a limited number of theatres, Michael. So that makes me feel uncomfortable. I didn't watch through to the end, Michael, and I know it doesn't show the actual massacre that happened at Port Arthur. Where does it go up to?
Yeah, interesting creative choice. The film ends essentially directly, like the instant before that first shot is fired. And I found that really interesting because, no, I don't want to see these events on film, not at all. But it just felt like, why spend the whole movie building up this person and building him up and making us, like I said before, almost feeling sorry for him and then not show the terrible things that he did. Do you know what I mean? It just seemed like a strange creative decision to me personally.
Well, I think if you were going to go that far, then you would need to go further to current day, because I think if you're watching something, you want to see the events come to their rightful conclusion, and that is him being punished for what he's done. So you would want to conclude with him being jailed for life, I suppose.
And in some way, it's like there's no resolution or care to the victims, right? Like they're not even really shown. And I'm not saying that we want to see that, but it doesn't feel like there's any focus in this film on the victims. It's really just focusing on him and his life. And I find that very strange.
Yes, and that's what made me feel uncomfortable. And Kelly, what did you think? Have you seen it?
I have watched the start. I was a little bit triggered by it, and I do want to watch the end, but this is something that I'm very passionate about, so excuse me if I don't speak very well. But I think the idea of the film was not to show what he did. Most of us know that. I think the intention of the film was to show what the effect of poor mental health, bullying at school, no intervention, no peer support, being disliked, ridiculed, called a freak, all of these things, what the effect on a person, what that can be. I have two kids with a disability, both with ASD, so going into adulthood, I can see the effects. I know many kids with ASD as well that often experience bullying and non-acceptance and depression and misinterpretation without intervention. I just think as a society we need education that this can be the result of people with no support and undiagnosed disabilities or, you know, undiagnosed mental health issues. I just think it's the same. Not everybody is just born evil.
Yes, yes.
And I really think the intention of the film was to show this, and that's probably why I found it a bit triggering myself. I've discussed it at length with my boy's peer support mentor, and I'm not saying this is all disability, but this is people who have had either come from trauma, you know, I'm not saying everything... This is the result, that this is what happens. There are people that just are evil, but a lot of it comes down to all the things that I've mentioned in a person's life that can lead them to just one day making this decision. And if we put more focus and energy into what went on for him in his life to support, mentor, intervention, maybe we can stop things like this happening, including school shootings, you know, in America, all the same thing, you know, what led to that.
Kelly, you put that very, very well. So thank you very much for sharing your perspective. We'll just send you out a Campbell Electric's $200 voucher for appliances and air conditioning brands like Smeg, Bosch and Daikin. Try Campbell Electric's for the best price. Peter, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Look, just listening to that lady, I agree 100%. I mean, look, it's easy for our society to point the finger at people, but we should look back at what happened, where they got to, where they got to. I mean, he was let down by many departments, including the Tasmanian government as far as the gun laws were concerned at the time. You know what I mean? Everybody hates, we're quick to hate somebody, but with what the last lady said, you know, it's valid. We've got to understand why and how it got to where it got to.
Yeah, this is where I have a slight problem. We need to get to a break. Back with Michael Liberale in just a moment.
Afternoons with DD until 3.
Michael Liberale, one of our more controversial showdowns. In a word, would you recommend people watch Night Tram or not?
Oh, in one word, that's very hard, Dee Dee. I reckon give this one a miss. I just think that there's a lot going on here. It is kind of triggering at points, and I think I don't know what the overall message is, but, you know, if you must, go see it.
No, I'm with you. I wouldn't recommend it. I can't see the value in it. Thank you, Michael. We'll talk again next week.
That is it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this. Like I said at the top, there will be one more of these by the end of the year. It'll be a little bit shorter, though, because I only have 2 more weeks, I think, of doing this. Yeah, I'm pretty sure my last one will be the 15th of December. So just before Christmas, I'll have one more of these. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Really enjoying doing this and really enjoying being able to share it with you guys. So I really hope you do enjoy it. Thank you so much. I will speak to you when I speak to you. I love you. Goodbye.
This podcast was a Radio Mike original production. Head to radiomike.com.au to check out all our other content, stay up to date at radio.mike on Instagram, and get in touch, radiomikepod@gmail.com.